You're listening to Brendan Sinclair's Business Mix from tailoredpodcast.com. Marketing, media, and web information sure to hit the mark. Grab a drink, settle down, and get the news from an expert who's been there, done that, and wears a t-shirt.
Hello and welcome to show number 15 of the Business Mix on today, February 15, 2006. Today's my daughter's 15th birthday. Tina, can you remember when you were 15?
If I think about it, yeah, I can remember when I was 15.
It's almost quarter of a century away for me. It goes so quickly. I remember my dad saying to me, life just goes so quickly, and I'm thinking, yes, you silly old bugger. But now I'm the one saying life goes so quickly.
I think it gets quicker when you get older.
It's racing by right now. Anyway, on today's Business Mix, we'll be talking about, as usual, three things. It's an ideas show. We'll be talking about ideas, how you get ideas, how to evaluate ideas, and how to get most out of your ideas. Also, have a look at some advertising that's been on recently and talk about controversy in advertising. And the third thing we'll look at is how to increase your online sales, or your offline sales for that matter. Just a few little tips and tricks from our experiences to get those sales going through the roof. So firstly, we'll get into ideas. Tina, how do you come up with ideas?
I can never really force myself to come up with ideas. They just sort of come up at odd moments and then I have to catch them. And
do you think though the ideas that aren't forced are the best ideas?
Yeah, usually.
I find that when we come up with ideas, particularly here in the office, and we come up with obviously a few, we have some big ones. Actually, there's a phrase for them here in the office. They're called Brendan's clown ideas. It's when I come up with a big idea and it's a stupid idea. But every now and then I come up with an idea, or we come up with an idea that's good, and you just intuitively know that it's good. Like we've come up with an idea for a part of the business that we're all pretty sure will do really well. In fact, I'm almost certain that it'll do really well.
Do you think that intuition comes from experience, or it just comes from some
voodoo feeling? Oh no, definitely comes from experience. No, it's not voodoo or witchcraft. It's definitely based on experience, because I've seen so many ideas over the years. So many people have come to me with ideas over the years that I can separate the good from the bad. Like this idea that we've got now, the big idea, is intuitively for me a great idea because we're already involved in the industry we're going to enter. We have all the skills. It basically ticks off all the check boxes that I have in my head for an idea or a business to take hold, and I've got little doubt that this one will be a roaring success. Tell me honestly, what do you think of the idea? How do you think it'll go?
I think it's a pretty good idea. It'll be interesting to see how it goes, because I haven't had as much experience as you in how the media takes hold of something and then...
Yeah. To those listening, the media component is a significant part of this, and I just feel it's got a lot of media legs in it. I think it will resonate with a lot of people. So getting your ideas is it's almost a natural progression based on your experiences, based on your assessment of different markets. I'm talking about business ideas here. So it's nothing that can be forced. You can't sit down and go, let's find an idea. I mean, I guess you can.
I think you can do things to stimulate new ideas, though.
You can't force
yourself to come up with an idea, but you can put yourself in a different situation.
Yeah. Brainstorming is always one that works for me. If I sit down and talk with people, then I'll come up with good ideas. When I'm running or cycling, I always come up with good ideas.
Yeah?
Yeah, it must be because you're more relaxed, or your brain's a little clearer or whatever. And I know when I get back to home or the office or wherever, I write down those ideas or actions to do, and they generally work out pretty well. So brainstorming is one way to do it, putting yourself in a different situation, different stimuli. You get benefits of other people's experience. And I think it's really important to have the input of people who aren't in your industry, because they look at the problems with a really fresh perspective, whereas I look at problems in my industry with the same old tired experience I've had from 10 years, whereas someone comes in completely fresh and looks at them from a completely different angle.
Do you ever think you can tell someone an idea too soon, though?
Oh, yeah, and you can...
And what if you think it's so good that you don't want to give it away?
Yeah, that happens a lot, and then I forget the idea. You don't want to give your... Yeah, it's a tough one. You don't want to give your ideas away. One thing I know that crushes ideas is when you go into too much detail too early. We've been kicking our idea around for, what, a week or so? No, maybe a couple of days. Yeah, a couple of days. And Anthony, here in the office, I'm sure Anthony's listening, is a completely different brain to mine. His is incredibly organised and detailed, and he is already thinking about the details of the implementation of the idea. And that completely puts me off centre because I'm not up to that stage. I'm not as advanced thinking as his stage. And I just think if, for me anyway, if we look at the details of it and start to look at the logistics of implementing the strategy, then we'll crush the idea. Whereas my general philosophy is have the idea and then take action. Don't plan too much out. And then as soon as you're taking the action, you're more committed to it already. And then you start to implement the strategies and the details that Anthony's thought of, you know, a month beforehand.
I always think of an idea like a little seedling, like you've got to let it grow strong enough to... That's sounding really airy-fairy.
That's way too weird for me. Yeah. That's like some new age kind of... You're the voodoo one, aren't you? You're the white witch. No, that's very true. Because if you nurture them in the appropriate manner, toss a bit of water on them or give them a bit of time or... get some more input into it or look at some other issues within the industry that you're thinking about, then, yeah, it does get nurtured and it does start to grow. So that's a lovely plant analogy. So let's wrap that up. So we've got getting your ideas. Obviously, they can grow just by you sitting there thinking about them, come to you naturally. They can come by getting stimulated in such as brainstorming activities. Any sort of stimuli, I guess, books or movies or radio or listening to this podcast, you think, hey, well, when I do a podcast, I won't do a podcast like Brendan. So there's lots of different ways to stimulate ideas. The key, I guess, is telling what the good ideas are, and that's probably the hard bit. Based on my experience, I reckon I'm good at picking what ideas are good and what are bad because I've seen so many and I've seen the different personality types associated with the different ideas. I'm the sort of guy that takes action and sees how they go. I guess the worst thing you can do is grab an idea and then try and implement it when it's a really bad idea. So the best advice there is to speak with someone who's, I guess, in business, if it's a business idea, who's in business, who has some experience in the area, and try and develop a mentor type relationship, I guess, so that you gather the benefit of their experience if you're inexperienced.
Someone that you trust too, I think.
Oh, you definitely got to trust them.
And you're more likely to tell them everything and get proper feedback.
So get your ideas, assess them, see if they're going to fly or not, and assess them a whole range of different ways, using your own experience, using other people's experience. And then do what works for you to implement it, whether you need to implement it straight away like I would need to, or whether you need to, like Anthony, get the details right in your head and then take action. And I think that's probably an important point, is that you need to personalise it for yourself so that it's your idea, you've got ownership of it, and you implement it the way you need to implement it so that it gets done. So that wraps up that airy-fairy subject about ideas. It's an interesting concept, isn't it? Because they're so important. If you find the right idea and implement the right idea in the right way, it can make a big difference to your business.
Yeah.
And the one...
And your bank account.
And the idea we've got that we'll launch in a week or two is a great idea, but more on that later. Number two, now let's have a look in controversy in advertising. Here in Australia, there's been an ad put out by the Australian Tourism Board, I think it is, and the ad is a TV ad and it shows some beautiful scenes of Australia and it basically invites people to Australia. And in the final scene of the advertisement, there's a gorgeous girl in a bikini says, "So where the bloody hell are you?" Now, that ad's been banned in the UK because of the word bloody. Have you seen the ad, Tina?
I've seen the ending of the ad because it's been all over the media here.
Oh, you haven't looked at it on video, online?
No, I've just seen the ending, so I know what the controversy is about.
What do you think of it? How offensive do you think it is?
I think it's hilarious that they've banned it.
I'll give you a bit of background on the advertisement. Apparently 3 months ago, and this is all from unverified sources, apparently 3 months ago the guys making the ad and their client, the Tourism Board, found out that if they used the word bloody in it, it was going to be banned in the UK. So they went ahead and used the word bloody in it, knowing full well that it was going to be banned in the UK. And then their strategy, obviously, is to pump up their public relations component, go into overdrive about what an outrage it is and how dare they ban the ad and get as much publicity as they can. So if here in Australia you've seen the ad or heard the controversy, don't think for 1 minute that it's just happened to happen. It was a thought-out strategy from day one to, A, get the ad banned and, B, get as much publicity for it as possible. I mean, I'm even reading letters to the editor, what a disgrace it is that it's been banned, it's only the word bloody, blah, blah, blah. I don't know whether that's genuine people writing in or people from the ad agency.
It's probably one or two and then they just get published.
Probably, just to keep it going because it's a nice little story for the media to run. So it's a great example that controversy works in advertising, but you've got some downside to the controversy. If you do generally offend people, that's not usually a positive to your business. Can you think of any times you've been offended with advertising?
I'm not easily offended. I do get offended by talkback radio hosts, though, that make stupid comments. There's always a loudmouth, obnoxious guy and a stupid bimbo female.
Yeah.
That I find that a little bit offensive.
People say that about our radio show.
I'm sure they don't. You're just making that up. Or maybe not about the loudmouth, obnoxious guy.
Yeah, I've got a feeling I'm going to get some emails this week. But it's just a completely contrived strategy, though. Okay, let's say something controversial. Let's have the loud. Like Howard Stern is always the classic, the US disc jockey. He's the shock jock, and he started the trend, basically, because if people are getting offended, they listen for longer. So it's a well sort of recognised strategy. But everyone still thinks that it's their genuine opinions, and I'd say in half the cases they're not. They're just there to say something shocking to grab attention. And when you look at the sort of money that's bandied around, I mean, God, Howard Stern signed up for $100 million, I think, with a satellite online radio show. That's just phenomenal. And there's millions of people paying to listen to his show each week or each day.
I think it's all right to be controversial, but if you've got an offensive attitude, that's what gets me.
Yeah. Do you listen to those people anymore, do you think, or you don't listen to them, or you just listen to them to think that's disgraceful?
I love listening to controversial issues, so I'll seek them out, so I'm just weird.
Yeah. No, but controversy does work in your marketing, but you've got to be careful that you don't overstep that line to mortally offend people so they don't listen to your radio show, so they don't watch your TV show, so they don't listen to your podcast.
What you can do is not actually voice your opinion, you just choose someone that you know is going to say something that you're going to agree with and give them more time or more airplay or more relevance than the opinions you don't agree with.
Yeah, I always like the question where the interviewer says, oh, you might be aware that some people are saying that your policies are a disgrace and will drag this nation down to its knees. I always like those ones, so they get around the controversy that way. So in terms of our business, I think we could probably be more controversial. I think there's scope there to grab people's attention by being controversial. And as loud and obnoxious as I am, I think there's still scope there. I think it could be an effective strategy for our business, more so than it has been. Like whenever I say anything mildly controversial, and I really can't give an example because I can't think of anything that's been too bad, then the amount of emails I get is huge. And I haven't really been offensive to anyone. I'll give you an example here. I read a website the other day, a blog, and he talked about what a great designer this guy was, blah, 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 and pumped him up, said he was best designer he'd ever seen. I went to visit the designer's website, and the very first page says, I think it's oops or no entry, you need Flash 8 to look at this webpage. Now that to me, and I was going to write this guy a comment in his blog, but I thought, no, I won't bother because I always get a hammering when I say stuff like this. But that designer is the exact reason why websites fail. If he's so stupid that he doesn't realise that the vast majority of people haven't got Flash 8 and aren't going to go off and get Flash 8 to look at his website, then he's kidding himself. It's crazy. That Guy isn't a good designer. Guy's an absolute crap designer, regardless of how good it looks, because if no one's going to look at your stuff, what the hell are you doing it for? And that's about as controversial I get. But as soon as I voice that opinion, then I'll get 40 emails saying, Brennan, your website's crap to look at, blah, 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 which I don't care about because our website does the job and it's effective at what it does.
But I think within the design community too, there's a lot of people that would agree with you that if no one can see it, then it's pointless.
Ah, yeah, don't know. The biggest kicking I ever got online was on a design forum called Australia in Front. If you want to have a search of that one, I get an absolute blast there because I put the point forward about how it needs to have commercial considerations design, and those people weren't too keen on it. So, yeah, I suppose you're always going to open yourself up for criticism and controversy when you're critical of others. I guess so. You can't, and then you can't really complain that you're being criticised. But they'll hurt my feelings.
Oh, see, everyone, Brendan does have feelings.
I'm really lovely. So we'll wrap up the controversy there. Controversy works, and it can work really, really well if it's well managed, like this "Where the Bloody Hell Are You?" ad campaign. But you need to be aware that you're going to cop some flack, and you need to have an understanding that you need to let that criticism roll off your back like water off a duck's back. And you need to realise that if you go too far, there are negative ramifications. So if you don't position yourself, like if that ad was "Where the effing hell are you?", then that would have been way too far, and the Australian Tourism Board and the ad agency would have got obviously in a bit of strife. So, yeah, that's what you need to be aware of. You can't go too far. It's relying upon just how far you can take it. So that wraps up controversy. Now, next we'll look at how to increase your online sales. And we have a little bit of experience in this one. First one that I'll look at, Tina, for online sales is, we were talking with a client the other day and someone in the meeting mentioned that they'd like people to have to register on the website before they went through the purchase process. And I said no, and this guy said yes, because they're just getting the exact same details they're going to need further on in the purchase process. And I said no, because number one, whenever anyone asks me to register on their website before I purchase, I don't, and I go away and I buy it somewhere else. And then I actually happened upon some research a couple of days later that found if you ask people to register on your website before they purchase, then a third of them will leave your website. So if you want to slash your sales on your website by 33%, have people register before they get through to the checkout process. And there's some shopping carts that actually, as default, get people to pre-register. So that's an absolute disaster to happen. So like anything online in obtaining information, if you make it as simple as possible with as little information as possible to be able to make the sale. Obviously, you want as much information as possible for your sales, for your ongoing marketing, etc. You want demographic information, whatever. But if you can narrow it down to getting just the absolute bare essentials, then you're more likely to make the sale. So,
can you ask them after?
Oh, yeah. And that's the place to ask them. Like pre-registering, you just get the same information you get during the sale anyway. So afterwards, and how good would this be as a sales process? Someone comes to your site, buys something, great, thanks, here's your confirmation email. By the way, take this survey, and you go in the draw to win a prize. And the survey is, what's your age group? What's your sex? What's your how did you find our website? All of those things. Ask them straight after. You've already made the sale. They think, hey, this company's really proactive. I go in the draw to win a prize, and everyone's happy. It's a much smarter way of doing it. So what stops you from buying online?
I always look at the site and try and guess how long it will take for them to actually deliver what I'm buying.
Mm.
And whether, if I have any problems or anything, that I'll be able to sort it out.
Yeah. Your design is a critical component. People look at your site and decide almost instantly whether you're a credible business or whether it's a credible business. And those issues that you mentioned there, how quickly delivery is and what will happen in case of problems, are two of the classic questions that people always ask. So you should address those questions as soon as possible. They should either be on the home page, smack bang in the middle, or they should be within your shopping cart. In fact, they should be all through your site, really. Because what you're doing there is just reassuring the customer that, A, everything's going to be fine, and B, if it's not, then there's processes to go through and that they'll get satisfaction.
So I do like seeing a phone number and contact details and all that sort of thing.
A lot of people don't put their phone number up there, which is crazy. I suppose there's a lot of small businesses working from home don't want a phone call at 3 in the morning, but get yourself a Skype account. And,
or an answering machine.
Yeah, an answering machine. Well, your Skype account comes with a message bank, so you can use that. So that's pretty easy. And people understand that, hey, if I buy from an Australian company, I can't ring them at 4 o'clock in the afternoon my time because it'll be midnight there or whatever time it actually is. So, yeah, the issues you've identified there, the security ones, are really important. So you've got to address and you've got to make the person feel as secure as possible when they're buying your product, because otherwise they won't buy. Then you'll knock off another 30 customers. You're down to just one third of what you started with.
It's funny too. I feel more comfortable buying from an Australian site than other sites. And just that's feels closer to home. Or
it's funny.
Easier.
It's a funny one that, and I talk about that quite a bit to people in terms of our business, because the vast majority of our business comes from the Gold Coast. When in reality, we can perform our job, the functions we perform, for any client anywhere in the world, but because we're closer, they're just so much reassured, so that if there is an issue they can come and see us, or we're not very far away, or they know what the law is, I guess, in the country, etc. So yeah, that's a funny reassurance one, isn't it? What about personalizing sites? Do you see that as a beneficial thing?
It depends what the product is. If it's an MP3 player, I don't care. But if it's a informational product like an ebook or a service, then I definitely need to know who's behind the website.
We've just finished the Google AdWords review.com site. We've also got SEObookReview.com. And Tina shot the video, so it's fantastic. And it's got the video, and when I'm talking, it comes up on the site on what I'm talking about. And those websites have a really high conversion rate. And it's because it's that personalization. It's because I'm addressing their security concerns, and it's because they can identify with me and see that, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about. Here's his face. He looks credible. He looks a bit goofy too. He looks like Shrek. All of those things, and it helps your conversion rate. So even though you said there that not too fussed if it's not personalized, our experience with the video says that you've got to personalize it as much as possible and maybe use video as much as possible to demonstrate your product.
I think it depends what it is. With something like an MP3 player, maybe the credibility comes from Apple or Creative or whoever's designing the...
But what if you buy an MP3 player, let's say you buy an iPod online, wouldn't you want to be reassured that if there's something wrong with that iPod that you would be able to take it back and get money back? And that's why people buy brands.
Yeah, okay. Fair point. I'd like to know that there is a credible person behind the website.
Hmm. Okay, so that's how to increase your online sales. Don't get people to pre-register. Make it as secure as possible. And Tina and I have just agreed that you've got to personalise it as much as possible. And our own experience tells us that, yes, you do need to personalise it as much as possible, because you will get increased sales. Give it a try on a website and see how you go. So that wraps up the show for today. Thank you for listening on today, March 15, 2006. Happy birthday, Laura Sinclair. And we look forward to seeing you next week. As always, Skype us on Tailored for feedback, or visit tailoredpodcast.com for all of our other contact details. Thanks again, and bye for now.
Bye for now.
Brendan Sinclair's Business Mix is brought to you by TaylorPodcast.com, where you get expert advice on all things business.